Welcome to today's Journal Club webinar. So glad you're able to attend. Since the world has gone virtual, it's a good thing that Journal Club figured this out about 7 years ago. I'm Rachel Dager, I'm SNEB's Executive Director. A little bit of housekeeping to get us started. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you'll see one handout, which is the slides for today's presentation. So you can download those and follow along. We'll take questions at the end of the presentation. Just type those in the question box and we will moderate those to the presenter. And when the webinar ends today, you'll be prompted to complete a survey. We appreciate your feedback on this survey as well as ideas for future webinars. We are recording, and so watch for an email on Wednesday of this week with a link to the recording, the handout, and the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. So I'll turn things over to our moderator. Dr. Kristen DiFilippo is Assistant Teaching Professor at the University of Illinois.
Thank you, Rachel. Today I get to introduce our speaker to you. Dr. Deborah Palmer-Keenan is an Associate Extension Specialist in Community Nutrition, which is the equivalent to Associate Professor at Rutgers University and the New Jersey State FNEP Coordinator. The majority of her lab's research over the past 10 years has focused on issues regarding household food insecurity, the evaluation of innovative methods for providing nutrition education, and incorporating physical activity education into nutrition education venues. Today, she is going to be sharing her research on to support the development of a campaign to increase physical activity among low-income, urban, diverse, inactive teens. As she's speaking, if you have any questions, please enter those into the chat box, and I will be moderating those out at the end of the session. And at this time, I am happy to pass it over to Dr. Palmer-Keenan.
Well, thank you for being here today. I know I have some sleep competition to share with the news, but I'm hoping that if you're not hearing it today, you can hear it in the future and you'll enjoy it. The title, of course, is representative of the actual journal article, which you're able to access in JNEB, of course. And I wanted to go ahead and go forward with the disclaimer, except that for whatever reason, my slides are not forwarding now. So let me see if I can get back here and make that happen. There we go. All right, so I have a little disclaimer for you. This was, in fact, research to support the development of a social marketing campaign. It was supposed to have been SNAP-Ed. And in New Jersey at Rutgers University, we had overseen the SNAP-Ed program from 1997, and we oversaw it till 2017, which was pretty much the year after we finished this research. So we had planned to put into effect this campaign for teens. However, our state government decided that it wanted to oversee the SNAP-Ed plan going forward after 2017, and they chose not to do the campaign. So this is research that was done to support a social marketing campaign, but in fact, that campaign has not happened. That said, we did experiment with a couple of campaign components, and at the end, I'll tell you just a little bit about those, and we have been working on a teen curriculum because we do think these things are really important, and I'll tell you a little bit about that again. Okay, so when we get into this, why teens? Well, first off, I'll say even without the slide that teens are an audience that really have been underrepresented when it comes to nutrition and physical activity education, at least by programs such as FNAP and other federal programs. Teens can be a little scary sometimes. They're a different kind of audience. Little kids are cute, parents are well-behaved, but teens, not so much. So I think that's probably why people have shied away from working with them a little bit. But they're an extremely important audience because they will be our next group of parents. So not only is their health important, but they will be having children very soon themselves. And it is the last time that we really have people as a captive audience. So in terms of physical benefits, a lot of the benefits they'll reap from physical activity will happen in the future, having to do with cardiovascular health. And the markers are better with teens that are active. They have better glycemic control. We know more and more of them do have diabetes when they're in youth, but they also get it as adults. So again, these sort of play into the future. As well as metabolic syndrome. But in the more immediate, you know, with teens who are active, they have better mental health, as we know everyone does. In fact, they've actually done some studies where they find that physical activity can be almost as effective as low-level drugs for depression. So extremely important. Improve self-esteem. They feel better about themselves. And they also have more favorable sleep patterns, which, again, we're finding more and more in the literature that teens should be getting a lot of sleep, but a lot of them are doing quite the opposite. So when they're working out, that's a time, and exercising, being active, that's going to help their sleep patterns, which is really very important. Unfortunately, as of 2015, which is when the last data we had before the paper was published, only 27% of teens met physical activity guidelines. Now, we're acutely aware of that 27%. I mean, a lot of teens are very active. You know, they're on basketball teams and football teams and soccer teams and gymnastics teams and dance groups. And we aren't really worried about those. So when we did this needs assessment and we found out how poor activity was among teens, I mean, it goes down more than 30 minutes a year in people's teenage years, we thought it would be important to develop this campaign. But most importantly, we wanted to target those less active teens. The ones that are active, we don't need to worry about them. So we were really, really interested in just targeting the ones where we have a lot of problems. But we needed some formative research. There really isn't much out about these teens. We could make some assumptions. You can put a few things together based on the literature. But we really needed more formative research if we were going to try to put together a campaign that would be effective. What we did is we went to some focus group recruitment sites. Some of the sites that we picked were places we were already working in FNAP Staff Ed. Obviously, 4-H group is an extension group. We went to a church youth group. We went to after-school programs. One was high school, and the other was at a community college. We did one focus group in all of these locations except for the community college, where we did two. And our recruitment actually began in July of 2013 in the middle of the summer. But what we needed to do was we needed to figure out who are these less active teens so we could make sure we were targeting the right people in the focus group. Now, there is no valid screener to identify who these teens are. Notice that we started the recruitment in July, and there is one pencil and paper instrument, the IPAC-A, that you can use to establish physical activity levels, but it's highly dependent on people being in school at the time it's administered. And the entire thing is built around how active you are in school, how active you are in sports after school. And we still wanted to take all those things into account, but we also wanted to use a screener that wasn't dependent on that since we were starting in the middle of summer. So what we did, since we knew there wasn't a valid and reliable instrument that we could use, we decided to put several different screening steps into place to really make sure we had the right. So the first one was the site leaders. We didn't even screen anybody that site leaders didn't predict were less active. So we went to the church and all of these places, but we said to them, who do you believe the kids are who are less active? And that's who we want to try to screen. Second thing is we use some screening questions that we developed ourselves, but they were developed on things that we found in the literature. I'm going to show you those in a second. The third thing we did was we asked a question during the focus group, and we actually excluded some focus groups because we suspected that some of the kids could possibly be more active than we had thought they were. The screening questions were as follows. When I'm in gym, I spend most of the time being active. If you look in the literature or you talk to any gym teacher, you'll find that there are kids who go to gym and basically don't do much. And there are also kids who refuse to dress out for gym. And so they sit on the sidelines. So that's why this one was important. I'm on a team. You know, basically that's one of the questions on IPAC. After school, I go outside and play basketball, ride my bike, or I'm active most of the time in other ways. We asked about if they were in classes like martial arts or dance. Again, one of the things that we do know teens do, or that if they dance a lot, like being in dance crew or dancing as much as someone who is. or they work out and exercise, or they run. So those were the ones that basically from the literature we thought we could get at it. Notice that they all go in the direction where they're asking if they're being active. So the highest response would mean they were the most active, and the lowest would mean they weren't. So we're asking about how much they agreed. These were our response sets. We're rarely or almost never, sometimes, usually, almost, always, or always. And so they qualified for this study if they said rarely or almost never to three out of those seven questions, and they had no response greater than a two or sometimes. So we were really looking for the lower end of activity. We recruited 48 teens into 8 focus groups. So you can see that's approximately 6 teens per focus group. But we removed 3 of the focus groups because during the opening question, which I'll show you in a minute, they named something they really enjoyed doing, like jogging, soccer, gym. And we felt like even if they weren't being active at the time, and then maybe that's why they had had put those responses in the last question, maybe they really did love jogging or soccer and just couldn't do it right now. And if that was the case, they weren't the teens we were worried about. So our study sample then, with the 5 remaining focus groups, which occurred between 2013 and 2014, and the focus groups were the 2 moderators and 4 assistants, consisted of 31 participants who were between the ages of 4 and 18, and most of them were on the older end of that. We were looking for teens who were going into 9th to 12th grade, or in 9th to 12th grade, depending on when their focus group occurred. And so the youngest ones were the ones leaving 8th grade, and the ones whose birthdays were August or September, you know, were still 14 at that time. So that's why we went down as low as 14. Most of them ended up being girls, which is not too surprising considering the inactivity rates are higher among girls than they are among boys. And every single one of the teens were ethnic minorities. I should have mentioned earlier, they told you I'm from New Jersey. All of these were done in New Jersey in urban areas, and we do have a very, very high ethnic minority population. And the kids who we identified through the organizations we work with and who were identified as less active all fell into the category. So our interview questions, basically the protocol we used is the one that's used by Richard Krueger, if you look at the literature for focus groups. And so we had an opening question. Please tell us your name and about something you like to do in your spare time. So that was the question that we used as the final screening to remove any focus groups that we thought might not be the kids that we were really wanting to talk to. The second thing we did was an activity. And what we did was an indoor walking activity. We used a DVD that I developed with Leslie Sansone some time ago. Teens, it's been used mostly, it was designed for adults, but it has some younger adults in it. Teens are very open to looking at people their age or slightly above their age, and we've had really good experiences with it with teens before this as well as since this. So we went ahead and used that, followed by a discussion of what moderate to vigorous physical activity was. Now, the reason we did this, because we wanted to make sure when we were talking with the teens and we talked about physical activity, that they were thinking about activity that was occurring up to the intensity level that we were. So one of the things I know from working in physical activity for some time now is it's really, really difficult to get people to understand what we consider to be moderate to vigorous physical activity. When you work with them in nutrition education classes and you say, oh, you know, how often do you walk so that you're active to a place where you're breathing harder? It's, oh, 6 hours a day. People think they do it all the time. But in fact, when you do something like this walking video with them, they're like, oh, that's what you meant. And it is often a higher intensity than what they were thinking of before. So in order to make sure that the teens understood what we were trying to get at, we did this activity with them. It was also really interesting, and then it kind of confirmed that we had the right kids, because a lot of them were talking about how it was a little bit challenging for them in one way or another, suggesting they weren't in that great of shape. Then we sat down and got going on the focus group, and these were the actual focus group questions. You can see they go from more broad questions to more targeted questions, which is what you want to do in a focus group. So starting with, what kinds of activities do you think teens like you would enjoy doing? What activities would turn you off? And they all knew we were talking about MBPA, like I said, at this point in time. Where are the places where you'd be most likely to be? How can we get our best messages out there? And paint a picture for me of what it would look like if we were to promote this to you successfully. Then we closed with a closing question to find out if there was anything that they thought of during the focus group that they wanted to add. So that's the protocol that was used. After we employed this protocol to get the data, we started the analysis. And I think it's important to note that myself and a graduate student in public health, Carrie Baer, who worked very hard on this and worked for us for quite a while, she was one of the people involved in the campaign. She and I were the people who analyzed this, and neither one of us were the people who conducted the focus groups. So we were trying to keep those two things separate. When we did the analysis, our first step was to transcribe and check the interviews. So again, Carrie and I were not involved in that. We had secretaries, for the most part, transcribing the interviews, and then the moderators and assistant moderators who conducted them went back over them to make sure that they were correct and that nothing had been misinterpreted or misunderstood. They also added any body language notes that we needed. It was extremely useful. I also wanted to denote that in my group, we do have secretaries transcribe a lot, but we also make sure that they all pass IRB human subject certification tests. In our case, that's the city certification, but we have anyone who touches our data certified in that way. So then Carrie and I conducted a thematic analysis. And in doing a thematic analysis, you develop codes according to the themes that emerge from the data. Well, in our case, we used a recommendation from HADAR to create preliminary codebook using pertinent a priori codes, which I'll show you in a minute. And then we used a six-step process by Brown and Clark to identify emergent themes. So in their process, you first become familiar with the transcripts. In other words, you read them all through, so you just have a pretty good idea of the kinds of things that are being said. It was in this step that we eliminated those three where we found that during the opening question, people had said that they enjoyed some kind of activity that was, in fact, a moderate to vigorous physical activity. Then we generated additional initial codes. You identify emergent themes, and you review and refine the themes, after which you define and name them, and then write up the report and results and report them, as we're doing right now, and as we did in the journal article. Now, I wanted you to know that when it came to the codes, the themes, we did it independently, but we did it and then met until we had and discussed it. We had 100% consensus between Carrie and myself. So some things would change after we talked about them, thought about them some more, and really went back and examined them contextually. So the themes and codes that we actually used, the first four a priori codes that we put out there were for social marketing. So a lot of you are probably familiar with the four P's if you know about social marketing, but just in case you're not, briefly let me tell you that the product is the thing during social marketing that you're trying to sell to people. Now, the overall product that we were trying to sell was moderate to vigorous physical activity, but the product needs to be more specific than that. So in a way, we generally knew the product we wanted to sell, but you'll see in a minute, we were also finding things about the product out as we went through the focus groups and listened to the participants. The price is the second thing of the four P's, and that is, what is the person that you're working with going to have to pay in order to buy your product? So if they're going to buy our product, being more physically active, what price do they have to pay? And the price can be money, which in some cases it would be. We're working with low-income kids, so maybe they need something that requires resources, or they think they need something that requires resources. Could actually be money, but in many times it's not money. It's some psychosocial construct like giving up sleep or giving up free time. That would be the price, and we needed to find out what that was. We need to know where to place any marketing materials or marketing events that we were to put together Where could they be found, and where would they be open to receiving the messages that we had to put forward? And then finally, the promotion is not so much using billboards as it is figuring out what kind of promotion, what kind of spin do you have to put on this in order to make it impactful. And so these are the things we knew we wanted to look at. These were our A priori codes. The themes that we actually found emerged from the data, there were only three, but there were three really interesting themes, I think. The first one was fun. It was real clear that fun was the most important thing if we were going to pull off something that was effective. Being in the teen's comfort zone was the second thing. Again, I'm going to go into this in a little bit more detail in a second. And the other was cool and relatable. So whatever we do, it's got to be all three things. So what is fun? Fun changes as you age. Fun is a different thing depending on who you are. And again, with these inactive teens, we needed to know with regard to activity and even in their basic lives, what is fun? Well, these teens, a lot of them did a lot of things at home and on their own. They, outside of school, they weren't spending a lot of time with people outside their family for the most part. And they told us what they thought was really fun were tech-based activity games and exercise routines. If they were going to be active, they liked the tech stuff inside their homes or inside another area. Video game system, active games. This included also things they could get on demand on TV and things they found on YouTube. Also, they said they really enjoyed doing the DVD that we had done there and that they would consider doing that or using Insanity or something to that effect. Now, this told us something about both product and placement when we looked at it. So the emerging theme is definitely fun, but it tells us if we were to try to get them to do something, you know, these are things they think are fun. So if we work within these frameworks, it might enhance our product, and that might be where we want to place some of the things that we want them to know the messages as well. Now, when they were out with others, they told us their favorite things were school field days, pep rallies, and health style events with stations. They actually said that if there were stations like obstacle courses and bounce houses, they would think that would be a really fun thing to do. Community-based warm weather outdoor events like National Nights Out in Clovia's, which is an open street event where people do all kinds of activities in the streets. And they were interested in those either in their own neighborhoods or in neighborhoods that were nearby. Now, again, both of those things told us a little bit about product and placement. They also liked things like water and amusement parks and going to the beach, but it was a low-income group, and they told us that these were pretty much special occasion things. But if we were able to think of some things having to do with water, it might be a good way to approach them in a way that would be effective. And then again, they also liked inclusive challenges that they could succeed at and that they felt encouraged and could easily participate in instead of just watching. They used the words just watching. Apparently, a lot of times, a lot of these kids felt like they were not as coordinated as some other kids. They were not as good at sports as other kids, and they felt like they spent a lot of time watching. They wanted things they really could succeed at. And again, that told us a lot about product and promotion. Overall, indoors and outside, they wanted less intense sports. They wanted bowling, table tennis, swimming. And sadly, a lot of these things they, again, couldn't do due to a lack of resources. But we could take advantage of these sorts of things with the right resources ourselves. They liked individual or group competitions. Competition came up over and over again. They really liked competing when they felt the challenge was such that they could compete. And again, you've got good ideas for product using this. But one thing to know is that they valued their free time very highly. And they said the things they liked to do in their free time were to lay on the couch, sleep, have time with family or friends, watch movies, play video games, electronic devices, music, shopping. These were very creative kids. A lot of these kids were telling us how much they liked writing things or music. So performing, they were really into that sort of thing. And if they have to give those up to be active, or they perceive that they have to give them up to be active, again, that's the price they feel like they would be paying. Another price they feel like they would be paying is losing if the challenges were too difficult. You know, so these are important things to keep in mind if you're going to develop a campaign. What was not fun? If we were to do any of these things, the price would be too high. And that is more intense organized sports, formal exercise and calisthenics, jumping, jogging, and PE class. They did not like these things. Now, I think this is a really important thing to note right now. You know, one of the things as nutrition educators we want to see happen to increase policy system environmental change, PSE, is to have gym more available in schools, to have more hours. I mean, there is really not a very high requirement for most high school kids with regard to PE, because they put PE in the same category as health classes and things like driver's education. And the kids really do not have to be active very much. And of course, we've all been pushing for it. But I think it's really important for us to note that for inactive kids, often PE has a very, very negative connotation. That came up over and over again because of the kinds of activities that are currently done in PE. So if you can keep that in the back of your head, I think it's a good idea. So comfort. Comfort was very important. What was comfortable to them? Again, less intensive activities in environments where they felt safe and free from judgment. They said they felt that way when they were with their families and their pets and small groups where everybody had a chance to try things. They mentioned church when they were talking about groups. And here's, the places, home, YMCA, teen and community centers, and churches. Those were the places they felt safe. They felt like they weren't going to be judged, and they thought they would like to do activities there. They like outdoor spaces like local parks during comfortable weather conditions, especially again if they weren't being watched, and walking for fun or transportation in their neighborhoods, malls, or parks. And walking was the number one activity that was named. It's not too surprising if you look in the literature, pretty much adults and teens, that's almost always the favorite activity is walking. So these things told us a lot about product promotion placement. We examined them. If you look over the article, you're going to find a lot of really great quotes. So you might want to look at that at a later time. And you're also going to find that we framed the results in our discussion through product promotion placement. So it's a little bit more in detail than what I'm showing you here, but given our time frame, I thought this is the best way to show it to you. But again, we're looking at products that are less intense. We're talking about placements and places where people don't feel judged. And the promotion has to be something that is, taking place in these locations and that makes it look safe, that makes it look like what you're proposing to them is going to be a judgment-free zone, pretty much. So what is not comfortable to them? So again, this would make too high a price. Well, adverse weather conditions. They do not like it if it's too hot, too cold, raining, snowing, or snowy. What is not comfortable is being embarrassed. And they really don't like gym, again, because they have to change clothes and shower in front of other people. And that was very uncomfortable to a lot of the less active kids. They don't like activities that hurt or are tiring or leave you out of breath or make you sweat. So those are prices we got to be aware of. And not getting picked and being made fun of. That was another concept that came up that was extremely uncomfortable. And when they thought of MVPA, these are things they thought of. We certainly want to work against that in terms of the price. And again, this tells us a lot about all of the different constructs, price, product promotion, and placement. So what is cool and relatable? Because they really wanted it to be cool and relatable. And a lot of times when this was discussed, it was discussed within the context of who was leading it, leading activities or sponsoring activities. They did tell us straight out that not one size would not fit all. And that's pretty consistent with what agencies like Rescue have found about teens. There are different teens. They have gamers, they have music lovers, and they were saying that these inactive teens might like different things. You know, your gamers might like the active game systems, whereas your music lovers might love dancing. So They told us to be cautious of that and to make sure we were including different things in any kind of promotions we put together. They all agreed that whoever was featured or running things had to be attention-getting, attractive, outgoing, funny, confident, positive energy, young, and like them in one way or another. And like them often meant not athletes, which we'll see in a minute. Some of the females, none of the males did this, but the females, and again, bear in mind we had 71% females, that mentioned they would like good-looking celebrities, and they named James Smith and Chris Brown themselves. They like TV hosts, actors, YouTube personalities, and they said they would really think it was cool to have promo items that maybe celebrities were wearing. So if they saw that their favorite YouTube personality was wearing a shirt that had our logo on it or that had a message we'd put together, they'd be more likely to want to wear it themselves. So again, this told us a lot about how we wanted to promote things. What isn't cool and relatable? Well, they said that's adults, especially like their principals and their parents. And pretty much anyone who speaks at them, they really don't like that. They liked being involved with the person and being friends with the person. They really didn't want someone who's speaking at them. And they thought that anytime it seemed like it was mandatory and not a choice, it would be a turnoff. There were a lack of consensus on a couple things. Specifically, some of them thought using people like LeBron James in ads or in any kind of marketing would be favorable, but others said that these people were not relatable. They made the point that, first off, they were athletes, and so they couldn't relate to them themselves, whereas they were still relatable to other kids because of their demographic or because it's a sport they really enjoyed watching on TV. But the ones who were against it also told us they often didn't watch these on TV and were not even familiar with some of the celebrities that the others said they would like. So we did not have a consensus on that. We also did not have a consensus with regards to social media. They all use social media. That was undoubtedly true. Some of them thought, because they enjoyed social media, it would be a good idea. But some thought that if we were to go in with messages about being active, uninvited, that we were sort of invading their privacy and that they really weren't interested in receiving that kind of information when they were trying to have fun with their friends. So we definitely had a lack of consensus in those two areas. Now, can't go through without telling you what the limitations are. We did have limited generalizability in that this was only done in a single state with urban low-income people, predominantly female and African-American and Hispanic. So it could be very different if this was done in a rural area with another demographic or with kids that had more money, for instance. Our screening questions weren't validated, although we feel like using the three-pronged screening approach, we probably had our target audience. Based on their responses, we're feeling pretty confident. It was a small sample, but we did reach data saturation. By the time we got to the fifth focus group, we weren't really hearing anything new. So we still think that's pretty okay. And the focus group discussion scope was pretty broad, which could have limited some depth of responses. If we'd had more time, maybe a whole hour to talk about what they see a campaign looking like, maybe we could have gotten more out of it. But again, we felt like we had a pretty comprehensive view of what needed to be done by the time we finished up. So we had concluded that we really needed some novel approaches to attract and engage less active teens in increasing their MVPA. Like I said, just increasing the amount of time in gym may go the opposite direction from what we're hoping to accomplish when it comes to kids who are not enjoying the activities that take place there. But we do need policy systems and environmental change efforts to make sure that they can afford whatever we do and they're accessible. They'd like bowling. Why not have something like Bocce in the Park where they can do some sort of bowling and make that happen for them? We do need more research to examine the physical activity barriers that are faced by these teens and see if we can alleviate more of those. And schools, teachers, and parents really need to think about how less active teens and non-athletes can be better served in PE classes. The PE classes are still very heavily reliant on things like the Presidential Fitness Award, where These kids are asked to run a mile, and they could not hate something more. I mean, when they're talking about having to do jumping jacks, having to do push-ups, having to run a mile, they really hate it, and that makes them really not like PE. So we think that needs to really be taken into account more often. So I just want to take a minute here before we finish up to talk about a few things that we've done since this happened and a few things we've learned. Again, we did not do a campaign, but I used to be a high school teacher prior to becoming a professor. And the last 10 years, I've worked a lot in physical activity. So physical activity in teens are a thing that are really important to me as I kind of wind up my career here. And so we've stayed on this. We did run an online MVPA competition, but it was only modestly successful. It was largely unsuccessful. Let me go that far. Most of the schools, we did this whole thing online. We had four schools working against each other. The school that had the most participation was to win a pizza party for everybody. Most of the schools told the kids about it. What they were supposed to do was to chat with each other about ideas for becoming more active. They were supposed to make videos that they shared with everybody on the MVPA website that we put together. Basically, there was hardly any activity in three out of four of the schools. The fourth school, the winning school, was the only school that really involved themselves that much, and that was because they did their MVPA videos while they were in school. So we basically learned that what the kids were telling us during their focus groups, that they were not interested in using social media for this, was true. When they were out of school, they wanted to talk to their friends. They did not want to be messing around with us on MVPA. So I think that's an important thing to learn. It was a mistake we made, and I hope that you all don't make the same mistake. We feel like we needed a physical activity barrier scale for use with low-income teens. And in fact, we have been working on that now for the last 5 years. We put together a publication that will hopefully be out soon on a validated instrument for doing this. We have 41 items that we've found to be barriers to activity among low-income teens. And just to let you know, one thing that was interesting out of that, but otherwise you'll have to read the paper once we publish it, is weather actually turns out to be a bigger deterrent than unsafe neighborhoods. A lot of people would think unsafe neighborhoods would be important, but it just didn't come out as being that big a barrier to our teens. And we went into the literature and found one other person that found that as well. And if you bear in mind that these are the neighborhoods these kids grew up in, they're their neighborhoods. Even though we're kind of afraid of them, it seems like they have less of a fear than we do. And they've already worked through any issues they have with that. So we thought that was kind of an interesting finding when we did that. We've also been working on a curriculum now called Rev It Up for teaching nutrition and physical activity to low-income teens. And one thing we've found doing that is that gamification really works. They love games, but the dancing in a classroom setting, and our curriculum really is geared toward a classroom setting, has not been very popular at all. Kids are really hesitant to start dancing in the middle of the health class in the middle of the day. That even though they might love dancing, that's, again, not the place. So the biggest take home I have for you here is that text context really matters. That would be the overall theme here. When we do the MVPA competition and we do social media stuff in school, and we're competing with the other kind of in-school activities they're typically called upon to do, like worksheets or reports or something like that, then they're really interested in doing it. But if we try to use that kind of approach outside the school setting, they really have no interest in it whatsoever because they have things they'd rather be doing on Facebook than talking to us or putting up videos for a thing that might get them a pizza party at school. Same with the curriculum. We're finding that they really love the games that we do when it's in a classroom, but they aren't the kind of things that teens are going to want to do after school is over. Again, after school, they'd rather just hang out together. They'd rather talk. They'd rather do other kinds of things. And But even though they don't like dancing in the classroom setting, we find they do like dancing outside the classroom setting. So when you're looking at what teens like to do, I think it's, or anyone for that matter, we've really learned that the context or where they're going to be doing it can really play a large role in terms of if they think it's a really fun thing to do or a really not fun thing to do. And I think that's got to be the take home, since fun is the number one thing that we found teens enjoy or teens want out of MVPA or pretty much anything. So I want to thank you. And hopefully we've left enough time for questions. I was shooting for 40 minutes and looks like that's where we are.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much. So the first question that we have, and if you have any questions at this time, please type them into the question box. But the first was any incentive provided to the focus group participants?
Yes, the focus group participants all received $20, which is pretty standard for us for an hour's participation.
Yeah, and then another question is, when you do social media, do you have your own account or use the school account?
The schools, the teens were posting things that went to their school and went to us from the schools when they were doing it. Some of them did post directly, but some were posting to school accounts, and that's where most of it happened. But again, most of it that happened were happening at the school where they did it in the school, so using their school accounts worked really well.
Okay, and then a follow-up with that, how did you develop the partnership with the schools?
Oh, boy, we've had to work a long time on that. We are currently, now I only have FNAP, as I pointed out. In 2017, we had SNAP and FNAP. And we only have four programs in New Jersey, four different counties in FNAP, and we're up to about eight schools at this point. Basically, what happens is you have to kind of find a health teacher. Well, we work mostly with health teachers. We've done some with PE, but it's mostly health. You find a health teacher who's really interested. You work with them to work your way through the whole system. You end up having to go to the principal, the superintendent, the board of education. And but we've got a pretty good sell here. Most of the schools are aware of the fact that that obesity is a problem, that kids are inactive. We've got a pretty good sales pitch. But you pretty much have to go all the way through it, and then you do it with one health teacher. If you're doing something really fun and it gets at the core curriculum standards, they are learning about nutrition, they are learning about physical activity, you get one teacher to do it, they all start wanting to do it. But it takes a lot of work just to get to that one place. And I will also tell you that not much happens during standardized testing. So really the best time we have found for teaching this curriculum is in the fall semester, not in the spring. Because once the teens hit that spring semester and they're doing testing, it's much more difficult. But if you can get in there in September, a lot of the teachers really recommend or really welcome it. I don't know how many of you have been in low-income schools, high schools, but the first couple of weeks are kind of chaos because new kids are coming into the class because they change their schedule. Other kids are going out. There's very few counselors. It's a long time to happen. You have to put the books out. And actually, the teachers kind of don't like to teach during that time frame because of all that chaos, but they love it when we come in. So, yeah, fall is your best semester. We have done spring, too, successfully, but fall works better, and it does take a lot of work. So you got to have a lot of chutzpah and be patient.
Yeah. No, that's great advice. Thank you for sharing that. So that is all the questions we have at this time. I want to thank you again for sharing your research and reminding us of the importance of context and just sharing both about the qualitative aspects and reaching these kids who are so important. So at this time, I can pass it back to Rachel.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, very interesting. Just a reminder, there'll be a follow-up email by Wednesday of this week with a link to the recording, the handout, as well as your CEU certificate. And then there'll be a short survey when we shut off the webinar, so please answer that survey. And then we'll be back again next Monday at 1 p.m. for our next Journal Club, and hope to see you then. Thank you.